be nothing without you holding me up. Now I'm strong enough for both of us. Both of us, both of us, both of us.
Welcome to the Philosophy Symposium podcast. My name's Dr. Brad Atkinson. First, before I get into anything else, I'm going to give you a little bit of a disclosure. Some of the information that we'll be sharing over the podcast, it might be a little bit contravening to the current national law in Australia, where we might discuss things around not adjusting or not treating a condition and not diagnosing and those types of things. So one of the things that's really important is that whilst this information is designed for chiropractors only, it is not designed for the general public. It is not designed as in a way encouraging other people to not follow the national law. So as you hear the information, please make sure that you take it for the information that it is, which is about the conversation around chiropractic philosophy. So with all that said and done, I'd like to make sure that people know a little bit about me and what I do. My name's Brad Atkinson. I graduated from RMIT Chiropractic in 2002. So that makes me about 17 years in practice. I have been involved in chiropractic politics. I've been involved in our Spinal Research Foundation for a number of years. I have sat on the Victorian CAA board. I've had subcommittees on our national association as well. So why am I doing a podcast? That's a really good question. I think that I am consistently looking for ways to learn more. The more I look at chiropractic philosophy, the more I realize that I don't actually know anything. I'm not a massive reader, so I think sometimes having conversations with people and listening to information helps me to solidify it. So hopefully if there's more people out there like me that we can help keep philosophy as a forethought in the processes and the brains of the chiropractors that are practicing and hopefully help to develop philosophy more consistently across the profession. So that's the reason as to what has driven me to the Philosophy Symposium and obviously then the podcast that has spawned from that. So I'm concerned a little bit about chiropractic within Australia because our national
association has decided to forego subluxation as a, you know, a term of reference or a you know, part of the chiropractic lexicon. We are looking for ways to justify in the eyes of insurance brokers and other, you know, I suppose the medics. So as we continue to dilute our message of chiropractic, I feel like it's becoming harder to find our unique point with which we provide the community, and that's the detection and correction of subluxation. You know, my whole goal with looking after the people that I serve is to allow their nervous system a greater chance to function well. To do that, it needs no interference to their nervous system. That's the basis with which I've practiced, and I will continue to practice in the future. The concern from my perspective is that the profession, especially within our associations, tend not to really want to support that as an idea. It's not justifiable. It's not based in evidence. It's been contravened by others in the profession, and, you know, I feel like that's a really big issue. So my whole goal with setting up the Philosophy Symposium is really to drive more understanding around chiropractic philosophy, make chiropractic philosophy more relevant to the profession as a whole, but also to make it more relevant to the students that are then going to be consistently bombarded with a mechanistic view as they go through their qualification through universities, especially here in Australia. Now, I've got to make sure that we understand that Australia is, you know, it's a fairly decent size of the profession. You know, we've got 5,000 registered chiropractors or thereabouts, probably even more than that now. And whilst that's nothing compared to the States, I feel like we're a bit of a microcosm of some of the problems that are existing around the rest of the world. We have issues with, you know, in Europe with some of their registration boards, with McTominay and things lately. We've had issues with BCC over in Barcelona having some accreditation concerns around, you know, political problems. We see the chiropractors in Canada having major issues with some of their legislation as well at the moment, and obviously the United States whilst the ICA and the ACA consistently seem to represent different ideals within chiropractic. So I feel like we need to have a little bit more engagement around exactly what chiropractic is, talking about chiropractic and being engaged in a conversation that is going to hopefully help to solidify our identity within our population of chiropractors, but also within the chiropractic, you know, fraternity and the students that are then coming into that, and posing a different perspective on what they might see at through their undergraduate education. So I feel like the Philosophy Symposium was a great way in which we can start that. The big issue is it happens once a year, and whilst it's taking a lot of my time and effort to make sure that we get it up and running and that we keep moving it forwards and we're presenting new ideas and new speakers, I don't feel like that's enough information consistently to help people engage enough in the conversation, engage enough in the topic, or want to learn more. So we get them all fired up through the Philosophy Symposium and present lots of information and lots of speakers, and we have a wonderful weekend. But then they go home and they tend not to then be able to engage because, you know, they get caught up in day-to-day activities. So here's where the podcast comes in. My goal is to make sure that I can consistently drip feed philosophy information through to people as effectively as I can. So I believe a podcast is a great way to do that. Now, one really important factor for me is not to detract from the people that have already paved the way with that. So I'm an on-purpose listener and have been for a number of years, probably like 10 plus years. I don't want to take away from what Dr. Christopher Kent and Pat Gentempo do from an on-purpose point of view. I'm not going to substitute that information. Whilst I don't have the scientific knowledge and I don't have the time to filter through that, On Purpose is a fantastic resource with which I believe everyone should be subscribed to. So I'm not here to take that place. One of the things that I found with the philosophy part of the On Purpose program is that a lot of it became a discussion about how that person got to this point and what they went through, and then it almost becomes a political discussion as well. So I want to, whilst I will cover politics, I can guarantee that. I want to make sure that we still keep to philosophy as a broad topic within chiropractic. The other one that I really want to make sure that I'm supporting is Dr. Simon Senzon and the Institute of Chiropractic. So much information is housed on Simon's website, and he's been a fantastic resource for me through my ACP and consistently, you know, there. If I've got a question or a query, and he's constantly engaging in Facebook discussions around chiropractic philosophy and, you know, correcting issues of history and making sure that things aren't taken out of context and that the discourse around philosophy is, you know, is well respected. It's, again, a fantastic resource, so I highly recommend people look at that. I'm not here to replace that. Whilst he covers a lot of history, I want to make it current. So I'm going to speak to Simon, and hopefully I'll be able to get a conversation with him happening over the next, you know, few podcasts. But I do want to make sure that we are here to help support those individuals doing what they do, and they've done so fantastically well over the last couple of years with Simon and Chris and Pat over the last 22 years of their On Purpose recording. So please help me to continue to support them in that process. So I'm going to set up some times to speak to some people within the chiropractic profession, and hopefully if you've got any ideas on who you want to hear from, then make sure that you send me an email. The best way to contact me is going to be at info@thephilosophysymposium.com. Send an email through, ask some questions, ask who you would like to hear from. If you've got someone in Australia, particularly in Australia at the moment because it's easier for me to access, you know, drop me a line and tell me, hey, I really love to hear from this person and I feel like they've got a great perspective. Maybe you've heard them at a seminar. Maybe you've got some information that you think, you know, I'd really think that they've got a great viewpoint on that and I'd love to hear more of it. Then I'd love to hear from you about that as well. So at this point, I want to make sure that I give you guys a little bit more of the information from my perspective. When I sat there and I did my ACP thesis, I spoke really about vitalism within chiropractic education. If we continue to educate musculoskeletal focused chiropractors, we're going to struggle to differentiate ourselves in the marketplace. And as Patrick Gintempo consistently says, he says confusion causes chaos. You know, if you're not clear on what you do and why you do it, or if the public aren't clear on what differentiates chiropractic from physiotherapy and osteopathy, then there's going to be an issue. If you're confused, you don't buy. So we want to have a strong understanding of what chiropractic is. The big issue that I see consistently is that if you sit and ask a student what is chiropractic, they struggle to define it. As an association, I sat on the Council of Representatives for a while, and I was the chair of that organisation for that subcommittee for a while. I don't have a problem with differentiation or different points of view on that topic, but as long as it's roughly consistent with what chiropractic has come from. And chiropractic is not my topic to define. It was defined a long, long time ago. So whilst I might have a perspective on that and I might have different viewpoints based on my history, I can't change the definition of chiropractic because, as I say, it's already been put in writing. So over the last 10, 15, probably even longer than that, the profession has struggled to define itself. We've gone from, you know, looking after the wellness or the health of the spine and nervous system, and therefore being able to, you know, self-heal, self-correct, self-regulate, self-control, you know, as a wellness idea or as a holistic idea. And we've started to become a little bit more condition-based through our education, especially focusing on evidence-based. So as we continue to head towards that mechanistic idea, we're starting to produce people that struggle even with coming out of the profession that struggle to define chiropractic or struggle to differentiate chiropractic from physiotherapy. One of the common questions that I get asked is, well, what's the difference between you and the other guy on the other corner, the physio? And, you know, they tape, they crack, they crunch, they use electrical modalities. And you see a lot of these things being used within chiropractic as well. There's ultrasound, there's lasers, and there's G5s, and there's other devices, and we're doing Graston technique, and we're doing a whole lot of other applied kinesiology things, and we're strapping this, and we're electrocuting that, and we happen to adjust the spine. And it's only in that adjusting the spine that people see that there is a difference with the two professions. So whilst the public is confused, that's always going to be driven because the profession itself is confused. So if we consistently have mechanistic chiropractors graduating from our chiropractic institutions, then we're going to have a greater pull towards that mechanistic focus for the profession as a whole. Our associations will continue to appease the masses. And if we get more mechanistically focused chiropractors, then we'll have an association that tends to want to reflect the values of that as an organisation. So it's much easier for them to just go with the flow rather than actually stand up and define chiropractic any different from the World Health Organization or from WFC. And obviously, you know, as an individual chiropractor trying to define chiropractic can be challenging. Within an association, it is exceptionally difficult. But across organisations that are supposed to reflect the profession, you can see that there's a vast discrepancy between their definitions of chiropractic. So at this point, I've got no real clear way forwards, but I know that we're not allowing the profession to grow having a vitalistic viewpoint because we are suppressing that through our mechanistic education. Part of my paper was about the discussion on vitalism and where vitalism came from. You know, we talk about, all the way back to Galileo and, you know, even further, looking at the natural healers that used to allow the spirit or the unseen to basically do the healing within the body. And whilst when René Descartes decided that he is a thinking being and therefore, because he can think, he must be a separate entity as a thought process, as a physical process. he decided that the physical things are the stuff that we can break down. And from a Newtonian point of view, we now, you know, break everything into its parts. But as a chiropractic philosophy, we tend to think that the sum is greater than the parts. But from a mechanistic or a Newtonian perspective, René Descartes gave that perfect split where he basically focused on the physical reality versus the spiritual reality. And he said, well, I'll leave the spiritual stuff to the church and we'll deal with the physical things. And as we've continued to develop, we've seen that divide become greater and greater. And whilst there is parts of the profession and parts of other health professions that regularly focus on trying to bridge that gap between the physical and the spiritual, the mechanists don't want to understand or don't want to believe that spiritual side exists. They can't test it, you can't prove it, and therefore, because it can't be proven, it can't be tested, it's not scientific, and therefore it falls outside the realm of possibility. So it's a really challenging discussion to have within chiropractic, but one of the things that I focus on a lot is that whilst the vitalistic can encompass the mechanistic focused can't encompass a vitalistic notion. So unfortunately, with becoming so mechanistically focused, we're discarding vitalism as a thought process as part of the conversation within chiropractic, which I feel is to the detriment of the profession. So where to moving forward from here? That's a good discussion. That's a good thing that we should focus on. I really want to make sure that I find a few speakers and I find a few people that I can have conversations with that can help push my understanding of philosophy in the right direction. The goal with the podcast here is to have weekly, if not bi-weekly, podcasts that last about 20 minutes. We want bite-sized information that we can regularly digest, that we can keep people focused on the topic of chiropractic philosophy. So if you've got any ideas and thought processes, then please drop me a line. I'd love to hear from you. If you feel like this is going to be a worthwhile process, then that is awesome. Yes, there's a fee associated with the podcast because I need to give up my time and effort in practice to be able to make sure that I can do this. So hopefully you can subscribe. Hopefully you can recommend some friends to subscribe and that we can help grow the profession around philosophy and make sure that our idea of chiropractic isn't mashed over by mechanists that are trying to further their agenda rather than actually chiropractic's agenda. So for the first podcast, I've managed to track down Dr. Nimrod Wiener, who's been a fantastic chiropractor for a number of years and really led the way for our profession in Australia. Nimrod's been involved in chiropractic and chiropractic politics. He's been on the Association for CAA New South Wales. He's been a very strong advocate on the Australian Spinal Research Foundation board for a number of years up until recently. But most importantly, Nimrod's one of the deepest thinkers when it comes to chiropractic. And if you Google search Nimrod, I'm sure you'll come across his podcast. And in the next episode of the Philosophy Symposium podcast, I actually talk about some of his podcast topics. But it's a real pleasure to talk to him because he is a deep thinker. He really contemplates the greater meaning of the profession as a whole. So it's with no further ado that I'd like to welcome Dr. Nimrod Wiener to the podcast. Nim, welcome.
Yeah, great. Well, thanks, Brad. Love being a chiropractor and I love being in practice and absolutely love seeing the changes that that we all see with people as a result of the immense gifts that chiropractic is to each individual and the impact that we can have on our community. And this has always left me, I guess, with not only immense content, but also at the same time a paradoxical frustration that I feel like I'm not doing enough for people, for my community and for humanity. And so a long time ago, this has led me down the road of seeing what else I can do for chiropractic. In order to get it out there and help chiropractors be better and have more confidence and clarity in what they're doing. And so, very long story short, this has led me to sit on a number of political boards as a way of an outlet to impact the profession and impact humanity. And one of the boards that I've had the most pleasure sitting on was the Australian Spinal Research Foundation, because they are extremely congruent with what I would say is a traditional view of chiropractic, and they take that want to change the language and the power that we have through research and science for the profession. So I sat on the ASRF board for a while and came off it not too long ago, which had freed me up to pursue some of my own passions within the greater realm of chiropractic. And one of those has always been philosophy and the depths of our philosophy. And so doing a lot of reading through the Green Books and through other people that have influenced the concepts of chiropractic. And then obviously a background in a love for the research and the science and the way that we bring that into practice, the injunction of all of that in how we actually create a change when we see people in practice. And so the marriage of all of those three things, the philosophy and principles, the science and research, and the practice and impact, had me going down a rabbit hole of looking at what is the greatest change that we actually create for people. And so my latest, meaning the last 2.5 years, study and exploration of all of that has been into the intersection of chiropractic and consciousness. And so that's very much what's inspiring me and firing me up at the moment of looking at with what we do with chiropractic, does it have an impact on people's consciousness, their level of consciousness and state of consciousness? And if so, then exactly what does that mean? So that has me all excited in many different ways at the moment, and presenting those thoughts and the fruit of my exploration to chiropractors in different ways.
If I ask you from a personal point of view, so we would take the Australian Spinal Research Foundation's sort of hat off with which you were heavily involved in the definition that came out a couple of years ago. Can you give me a bit of a rundown on what you think chiropractic is? Like, how would you define chiropractic, knowing where the ASRF landed on their definition? Whether you have any inconsistencies within that definition that you saw that maybe didn't necessarily sit as well with you as you'd like, but obviously, you know, as a collective body, you've got to come to some agreement statement around that. So maybe you want to expand on that a little bit for me. And then I'll come back to the consciousness stuff, because that's just another rabbit hole.
Yeah, it is. And look, you know, I must say that above the excitement I have for consciousness, I have a greater excitement for chiropractic. So I'm happy to spend as much time as you want falling down that rabbit hole without even touching consciousness. Yeah. So I guess to answer your question first, what do I think chiropractic is? I think that chiropractic is the kind of, as I just alluded, it's the injunction, which means the way we make practical the principles and philosophy we have. And the core principles and philosophy recognize that there is something special about this phenomenon of life. There's something special about the expression of the phenomenon of life. And what makes it special is its dependence on the state that we as an individual organism have, on our level of coherence or harmony of how everything is working, on our more vitalistic abilities, including how self-aware I am, how self-organizing, how my self-healing abilities, and then definitely not least the expression of innate intelligence throughout that entire being. So I think that through chiropractic, what we have uniquely is the recognition that this phenomenon of life requires the expression of innate intelligence. And when that innate intelligence is not expressed to its fullest, then the being, the organism, and the phenomenon of life is not happening at its fullest. And so it's better to do something about that. And so in order to improve a person's state of being and their nature, we look for the cause of the interference of the expression of innate intelligence that's impacting the person's ability to be at their greatest. And for us, the cause of the expression of innate intelligence is the subluxation. So to reverse that line of thinking, as a chiropractor, I analyze and identify the presence of the subluxation, which is causing an interference to the expression of innate intelligence, and help entice innate to function at a higher level so that each individual can express life at a greater level.
And that expression that expression of life is obviously the main purpose, is just to allow that to be wholehearted and you know, with uninhibited, you know, being able to maximize that. So from that sort of understanding with chiropractic, or the subluxation being the factor that chiropractic can influence the human being, is that then what's led you to the, I suppose, diminished consciousness around, you know, has that taken you down into that pathway for that consciousness discussion?
Yes, it very much has. And I guess before we jump into that, you asked about the discordance I may have with the ASRF definition. So maybe just to finish that off. And that requires a little bit of history on what happened there. So ASRF is very much focused on ensuring that each chiropractor has more confidence and clarity around what they do in terms of identifying subluxations and adjusting them in a very congruent, chiropractically focused way. And so what we realized is, if we want to achieve anything with that over any decent amount of time, then we need to start with being able to provide for researchers and for practitioners a unified identity around what the subluxation is. Now, there is a lot of history around the identity and definition of the subluxation, and it's not discounting any of that, but ASRF realized that there needs to be a practical and conceptual model that can be tested in research and standardized in terms of questions of validity and reliability. ASRF board tasked itself with coming up with a conceptual definition of the vertebral of the subluxation, which is what you were alluding to before. Now, in terms of my personal feeling on that, I think it's a really good start. I know that there's some in the profession who would have rather that we didn't do that at all, and obviously there's many in the profession who would rather we don't even look at the subluxation, but that didn't interest us. I think that in terms of a practical start, what we ended up with is quite beautiful, and it's a model, and it needs to be tested like all scientific models. Like every other definition of the subluxation out there, and it's a valid way for ASRF to start down the road of researching it and being able to deliver something with confidence and clarity to chiropractors as well as researchers and academics. So I think it's pretty good. Now, for me personally, as a chiropractor, there's probably more that I would want to see in terms of what the subluxation includes, and also what chiropractic includes, but there's a practical reality to being able to research some of that where we're at, and as I said, I'm quite happy with what ASRF has come up with. I'm sure that model won't be around forever, and I look forward to the next iterations that the profession helps ASRF produce. Does that answer that?
Yeah, it does. It does really well. Look, I mean, I love the diminished state of being, and that graphic that I think, you know, Christopher Kent talks about it, the 4D model of subluxation with the disafferentation, dyspinesis, and dysautonomia. And I think the ASRF, you know, model as a whole, the reduced coherence, altered biomechanics, altered neurological function, and altered adaptability, all sort of centering around that vertebral subluxation, really summarizes aspects of that really quite well. But I think that
sometimes as we look for definitions, we can sometimes look for the things that we might not agree with. And by finding one or two things that we might not agree with, we tend to disclude the whole. And I know that happens with World Health Organization definitions as well. But I think with the research agenda that the ASRF have, I think that it does provide a testable model, and it allows them to be able to then consistently bounce those ideas off that filter. So
yeah,
I personally am really, quite pleased with it. And whilst we can sometimes pick apart one or two sentences here and there, I think overall it's a really good, it's a good foundation to build from.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you. And I think, we need something that encompasses enough of the hard mechanistic and materialistic components of the subluxation, as well as the grander ones that sometimes are difficult to quantify. And I think that the resulting definition does a pretty good job of allowing leverage for researchers, academics, and practitioners within that realm to look at all of that. Part of the struggle will always be, as you said, that people have their own niche focus. And if it doesn't exactly reflect what they focus on, then as you said, the baby gets thrown out together with the entire definition. So it's one of the things I've known after working on boards for many years is sometimes you just got to start. So, you're not going to please everyone. But you've got to take steps forwards, otherwise nothing will get produced at all. So, as I said, I think it's a good way to do that. And I look forward to future iterations that are even more beautiful.
Now I'm with you on that one. I think the ASRF should be commended at leading the way for that. Brings me to our other, Nimrod, I've known you for a number of years, and we consistently have banter around our other organisation that we've both been heavily involved in for a number of years. The Australian Chiropractic Association currently sits on the alternate side of the status quo, I suppose, to where the ASRF is. I would love to hear just an idea on where you're at with regards to the ACA. And their stance on things, because people are going to take me as a biased opinion there. So maybe you can start there, and we will come back to the consciousness thing, I promise.
Yeah. what can I say? I've practiced in a number of different countries around the world, and there is always a need for us as a profession to influence organizations and bodies in a way that can often be most influenced with a politically representative body. So what that means is, if I'm working in a region or a country there is a body that represents a good number of us professionals, it's easier for them to lobby and canvass other bodies as a unified voice. And that's meant that something like the old CAA and the current ACA should have a good role to play for the profession. And the more that chiropractic moves from a wave of loose entrepreneurs, loosely gathered, to a more of a what academia identifies as a profession, then there is a greater and greater role for a body, a politically representative body like the ACA. And it's important to look at our history of how we've pendulumed between being gathering of entrepreneurs and a profession. And I'm sure that will continue as well. Now, in terms of that, I think that the ACA plays that role of representing chiropractors and moving the profession forwards. And that, for me, leads to two questions. Well, who are they representing and what are they representing? And then what does leading the profession forwards actually mean? There is a temptation to to lead the profession forwards by making it like what other successful professions look like. And again, this is very typical of academics' analysis of professions getting more professional. When you look at things like law or dentistry or osteopathy in America or a lot of other well-structured professions, the more they moved into being a well-structured profession, the more the academic analysis says they replicated what other well-structured professions do. And the absolute benchmark that academics use for a well-structured profession is medicine. So basically what it means is whenever any profession wants to get more professional, they kind of look at what medicine does or has done and try and copy and fall into that fold. Now, for us as chiropractic, that obviously should ring some alarm bells, not because we shouldn't become more professional, but because what medicine does in a lot of their philosophy, principles, and practice is not necessarily appropriate to chiropractic. And the biggest way that it may not be appropriate is very much with our approach to health, to well-being, and to the greater state that we think an individual can be. So if we're emulating more of medicine in our political pursuits, then that will come at the cost of chiropractic itself. So not to beat around the bush, what this means is that there has been a very recent trend with the CAA and the ACA to absolutely remove all of chiropractic's traditional values from their stated values and divorce themselves from the traditional chiropractic perspective in order to become more like medicine and the other regulated health professions in Australia. And this is very much, we're seeing louder and clearer the symptoms of this in everything that they do and in the way that they're no longer representing traditionally focused chiropractors like myself. So, for example, it's very difficult to pin them down towards a definition of chiropractic that would recognize and acknowledge a person's vitalistic abilities to self-heal and self-organize, or let alone acknowledge the role that innate intelligence or the subluxation plays in helping that person be at their best. And so the more this happens, the more that we're going to see chiropractors restricted in their ability to practice that model of chiropractic. So, for example, the CAA, before it became the ACA, in 2016 had commissioned a research analysis on what is evidence-based practice for chiropractic in terms of different demographics of people that chiropractors may see and conditions they may see them for. And the recommendations in that research paper that the CAA commissioned very much do not recommend that chiropractors see babies or pregnant women for the majority of reasons that we normally would, or see people without specific conditions and symptoms that would get treated in an analgesic fashion within a very short period of time. So for someone like myself, who sees a lot of babies and sees a lot of pregnant women and sees a lot of people who want to be their greatest self as a result of what chiropractic can offer, then there is going to come a time in the future when the actions of the ACA may restrict me from being able to see any of those people. So where the rubber hits the road is, for example, a woman who I saw this morning in practice who brought her little girl in to see me because the girl didn't have good muscle tone when she was very young. And this was 3 years ago. She still comes in with her little girl. The little girl's muscle tone is greatly improved compared to where it was. But what she notices is that after the adjustment, her daughter sleeps better. She communicates at a much higher level. And she does things like she has never been able to do before, like draw triangles and connect greater word, more words in a sentence. So yeah. If that mother comes to me and she says, can you adjust my daughter? And I say, well, you know, the evidence shows that I shouldn't be seeing her and my scope of practice is restricting me from being able to do that unless she has one of these highly symptomatic conditions that the evidence shows I should be able to see her. I'm sorry, you're going to have to go away and come back when your daughter has these problems. She's going to be confused. She's not going to be very happy with chiropractic and what chiropractic can offer her daughter. And she's going to very quickly realize that her daughter is missing out on being her best self because we're restricted in our scope of practice. And that is all a result of moving further down the restrictive, materialistic only pathway of chiropractic and not being able to have an expansive ability to see people both for conditions and for what the evidence shows is effective, as well as for things that the evidence has not yet explored in that way. So that's, I guess, a very large rant on the fact that I feel that the ACA is not representing the greater beauty of what chiropractors can do and what chiropractic can offer to our community. And so it's going to restrict how much we can impact our community and really offer true health to change the course of history for humanity.
Nim, do you think that with regards to, like, obviously the focus at the, I feel like, and one of my rants in my introduction earlier on was that the ACA are trying to appease the greater, you know, the loudest voices when it comes to, you know, the current climate, which is evidence-based medicine and the Friends of Science in Medicine's call for, you know, being relevant and making sure that we've got proper justification for doing it. And these types of things, you're not going to find evidence for, but it doesn't necessarily mean it doesn't work. So the old adage, you know, that a lack of proof doesn't, I can't even remember what the phrase is. Proof of it not existing doesn't give it, you know, lack the fact that there is existence. If we keep moving in the mechanistic viewpoint, are we going to, you know, is that going to be to the detriment of the profession, number one, as a whole, but also the people that we do see? Is appeasing the, you know, the politicians at the moment going to be, do you believe, is that going to be the end of chiropractic as we know it? Or are we going to have to find a solution with the boards?
Well, I mean, you know, no one and nothing requires that chiropractic survives, let alone thrives. My personal feeling is that the more that we move down the path that we're already on, the more the chiropractic is going to be shrink and shrunk from the community and being able to offer things to the community. And if we continue on this trajectory, then very soon chiropractors who want to offer more are going to have a choice of either changing that, which may be too late to do already, or going underground and the risks that are involved with that, as we've seen with chiropractors in the past, or potentially leaving chiropractic under its current name and starting something new to offer the same service in a different way. I think that nothing will ever totally silence the concept of chiropractic. That will always survive. The injunction, the practice of chiropractic may not survive the next 5 years unless chiropractors do something about it. And, you know, whether it is too late or not, I tend towards hope and optimism because I don't like the alternative of pessimism and cynicism. You know, there is absolutely a part of me that wonders, you know, if you look at the Institute of Alternative Futures prediction for 2025, we're pretty much right on the track of one of their predictions that said that chiropractic will only exist in the very dark corners in a very restrictive model. There is very much a likelihood of that, and I don't think that I think what ACA is doing is certainly not helping that situation, as it's true for a number of associations around the world. They're not alone in that, which makes me even more worried about it.
Yeah, absolutely, and you've hit the nail on the head as far as some of my fears too. And I tend to always focus on, not, I wouldn't say I'm the pessimistic and looking for the cynicism in everything, but I think I come to you more going, look, the apathy drives me nuts. You know, people don't seem to understand the importance of what's happening and don't seem to be wanting to make enough of a difference. And I don't think it's, I agree with what you say, you know, in the past, as you said, I don't think it's apathy. It's also just not necessarily being able to create too much change as an individual when the organisations tend to be rolling along in a different direction. And where the rubber meets the road from a profession point of view, it's challenging to turn the big ships around, so to speak. You know, they might not necessarily be overly powerful in the grand scheme of things, but that they're still moving in the direction that's pretty predetermined, I believe. So that's a big challenge for us as a profession moving forward.
It is, and you know, part of when I left the ASRF, part of my own exploration and studies was looking at what I hinted at before: what makes a profession, and where is chiropractic on that pendulum between free entrepreneurs and an institutionalized profession? And one of the things that is quite typical of that, that the academics have identified, is that the more a profession becomes a profession, the more embedded these institutions are with embedded momentum. And that can be really hard to change because you're fighting against an inertia that's been building up for many years, sometimes decades. And an individual can look at something like the ACA and think that's impossible to change. And I do tend to agree. I think that as much as there is a good sentiment to say, get on the board, bring your influence, that's tempting when you think you're one amongst, say, 10 board members. But actually, that's not a true quantification of the picture. What actually you are is one against decades of momentum that's been building. And and so it isn't so easy to change that. And for me, where I'm at in my career politically, it's very worthwhile for me to ask, where is the greatest leverage of my resources and talents and expertise? And it certainly is not in sitting on a board like that.
So this is where I'm actually going to cut that podcast short. My conversation with Dr. Nimrod continues next week, where we actually discuss chiropractic and chiropractic and consciousness in the world. So I'm looking forward to catching up with everyone and getting everyone's thoughts on the podcast. And I'd really love some feedback. So if you don't mind sending me an email at info@thephilosophysymposium.com, that'd be brilliant. Tell me what you want. Tell me what you think you need to hear. I sound like a Spice Girl then. Anyway, I hope that you enjoyed it. I hope that you will be able to provide me some feedback so I can provide some content that is going to float your boat, so to speak. Don't forget to register for the full Philosophy Symposium, which is on May the 4th, so Star Wars Day for all of those Star Wars junkies out there. All of the information that you need is on the website, www.thephilosophysymposium.com. We've got a great lineup of speakers coming along. Dr. Jeff Hanna, Dr. Tim Shakespeare will be on stage, so I'm sure that there'll be some chaos there. Phil McMaster, Kate Mainwaring, who's a fourth year student, Dr. Dirk Jacobs. So it's going to be a fantastic lineup of speakers, and I'd really encourage everyone to attend. We are limited to about 110 seats, I think it is. So don't delay. I know that it's a pretty typical thing for chiropractors to just leave everything to the last minute, but the last thing that I'd really want for people is to attend the seminar, or those that want to attend the seminar, for them actually not to be able to book because it's sold out. I keep trying to post some information on the Philosophy Symposium Facebook group, so if you're not on that group, you can always look that up and send me a message and I'll be able to add you through to that. Also, our Instagram page, The Philosophy Symposium. So there's plenty of ways in which you can engage with us. So if you've got any further questions or queries, please don't hesitate to contact us. Thank you very much for listening, and until next time, have a great day. We'll be brave.